You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasserin Securities. David, I want to go back to Friday because, I don't know, I wasn't really interested on Friday, but with about an hour to go on Wall Street, I had a look at the markets and I suddenly saw the S&P up 3% and everything rallying. Now, I've got my own theory about this, but I want you to give me your theory. Is it a short covering rally ahead of the Northern Hemisphere summer proper? In other words, July, August. Is it the fact that people are exhausted from selling and they think that all the worst is now sort of baked into the market, if you like? What do you think? Why did it rally so dramatically?
I think the latter. I think that perhaps everything is already baked in. We've been over negative, and nobody really knows. No one really knows. Everybody's having a guess, but the markets have taken the most dramatic view. And all you needed was someone like Bullard, you know, from the Fed, you know, one of the Fed Reserve governors, to say that this recession fears might be overdone, and you get one or two issues like that. I got a something from Alpine Macro, which I haven't read yet. It's their global strategy, and says, where is the bottom? So all of a sudden, we're now starting to dig at and saying, okay, so where is this going to stop? Which is a far cry from everybody saying, you know, it's going to continue. So suddenly, people are questioning whether it can fall further. Lindsay, I stand by what we've been talking. It's very early stages to start believing that this will recover dramatically against the backdrop that we have, where we don't know how long it's going to take for inflation to settle. You know, it could take a month. This might be the bottom. I'm not saying it's not the bottom, but it'll take a long time to kind of get away from it and to get confidence where people come in. You're going to have the rallies that we saw, and I'm thrilled that we're getting these kind of rallies and that. But I will only be secure or more secure when the numbers that come out give you some kind of comfort that things can mend, or, you know, that we're recovering. You know, I don't think it's there yet. So I'm bullish. I'm bullish, and I love it when markets pick up. And I don't want to get too nervous, but I think I would prefer time. Do you know what I mean? I prefer a bottom to be made on secure ground rather than, you know, people just coming in and that. But if it runs away, you know, then it runs away from you, as we saw with NASPERS today. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we have to talk about that.
We'll talk about it. What I'm trying to say is that's what markets can do, you know, when you're not looking. And that sometimes becomes an issue. You know, you say, well, why did it turn? Why did it go fast? And suddenly everybody's buying for no reason. But from my own, where I'm handling other people's money, where I'm handling like your money, or, you know, I don't mean yours literally.
No, I understand. Yeah.
You know what I mean? You've got to be secure that there's some foundation on which this is based. It could be earnings, it could be anything like that, or something that's more secure than where we are at the moment.
David, I have to look at we have to talk about this because it's the big story of the day. The first thing that came out this morning at 7:05 South African time, process disposal of JD.com shares received from Tencent Holdings Limited. You'll comment on that. NASPERS, exactly the same thing. Then we had process, the group announces the beginning of an open-ended share repurchase program of process and NASPERS shares. Then NASPERS comes out at 7:07. The group announces the beginning, etc. And then after that, annual results announcement for the year ended 31st of March. Process does the same. I've got Process up 16%. I've got NASPERS up nearly 22%. This is extraordinary.
Yeah, they were up even more than that. They were NASPERS at one stage and Process at one stage, which is what I've been watching, up almost 27% at one stage.
Yeah.
So there's been huge movement. It's difficult to get a grip on it. If we start with the JD.com shares. You know, those were issued. Those, that was a dividend that was declared by Tencent. They received, I don't know, what 130 odd million shares, which they sold, and correctly so. It's not part, as they explain, it's not really part of what they wanted, you know, of where they're going. It's not core, so they sold it, got the money, and that offset debt. That took away whatever debt they might have had, 2 or 3 billion, and puts them in a positive position. Now, I don't know where, I didn't go through all the narrative, you know, there's a lot of talk and whether they're going to sell more Tencent shares or a hint of that. Because, Lindsay, the last time they sold a chunk down, which was not too long ago, they said they wouldn't do it for another 3 years or so. So I don't know whether that holds or whether they've now neutralized that or negated that. I can't work that out. And perhaps this is why people are getting all, people are getting all excited and thinking that there's going to be lots and lots of money, which they can then go and buy back shares, which are at a deep discount. Mm. If you look at the pure numbers, they're awful. You know what I mean? The numbers are awful.
I thought the revenue was up. Sorry, I haven't gone through them, David. I thought that there were some very glamorous revenue numbers, for example.
No. Well, let's go. If we go through them, and I think this is relevant. If you go through them, Naspers, and I'm going at process because that's the one that I've been focusing on. You know, you then go down to Naspers, which has got a couple of small other small businesses. But they publish a revenue, EBITDA, and then trading profit. And trading profit's the real number.
Yeah.
Now, they made forget about some of the equity accounted adjustments in that. We're just looking at if this was a business, you know, if we consolidated all the, you know, the fact that they only own 30% of Naspers or something. If you brought that in a consolidated basis, I don't want to get too technical, but they made $5 billion, okay?
Yeah.
Of which Naspers contributed $6.4 billion. So, okay, should
How
I
How does
say
that work?
Well, that means that all the other companies took away.
You know? Oh, I see. So there was a negative. Yes, okay.
You know what I'm saying? So Tencent contributes 125% of Processor's numbers. You know, of profit. All the other businesses, the classifieds, the food delivery, payments and fintech and education, e-tail and all the others take away, mail.ru, which is now called YK. It's okay. You know, it gives a little bit of money. But fundamentally, all those other businesses have actually lost more money.
Wait a second. Mail.ru, I thought they'd written that off. Am I wrong?
I thought no. They made about 40. Well, they might have done it during the year. I'm not sure. I also thought they'd got rid of it.
Yes.
But it contributed about 46 million. So it might be something of the past. I don't know. I think it might be.
I think it's gone.
I also thought it was, but it is. It's possibly gone and it's out the numbers. But this is for the year, so it's in the numbers for the year. So I'm ignoring them.
Yes.
I thought they had done exactly that because of where they are. You know, because of it's in Russia. So you know, a lot of these numbers have actually reduced, have increased in losses. So when I look at that, I'm saying, okay, you know, food delivery is costing them an absolute fortune. The losses have doubled. You know, education tech also. Now, there might be reasons why that's happening. You know, I'm giving you a very perfunctory understanding of what's happened because you've got to go through 70 odd pages of reporting, you know, to get to the bottom. So as I said, I always like to go to the segmental analysis and go from there and say, okay, I've got a picture of what's happening. Now let's color in, you know what I mean?
Well, exactly. The
operating, put a little bit of meat around there.
The operating loss in 2021 was 5.116 billion. The operating loss in 2022, the period under review, 6.866 billion. So it's going up. And yet, on the other hand, it says, in a year marked with continued global turmoil and uncertainty, so they say, in other words, we've lost money, which has made for a turbulent operating period, they've said that their revenue grew 58%. e-commerce segment revenue grew 58% to $9.8 billion, and yet they're still not doing well.
Yeah, I know. You know, that's a problem. This is the Uber type business where, you know, eventually you've got to say, hold on a sec, I want to make money. You know, these are the kind of businesses that we often bring up when we talk about tech. I don't like to go into companies that are not making money, you know, that are not making profits. I don't like to look and you know, too much into the future. Now, if you're doing food delivery is growing and growing. More and more people are doing it. But you've got to control the whole world if you want to make money from it. And I don't think Uber's still, I don't think they're making anything as yet. So I'm not sure that those are the kind of areas that I would go into. None of the areas in which they're in, do they really have a dominant type of business, nor are they ones that I think are going to make a big mark. You know, in other words, change the axis on which the world revolves. As we saw with Amazon, or we saw with Alphabet, or businesses like that.
My theory on food delivery is it's not a big barrier to entry. First of all, we always talk about a company in Netherlands, in Eindhoven, called what is it called? ASML. No, ASML. Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. You can't just wake up and say, gosh, they're doing well, I think I'll do the same thing. You can't do that. But with a food delivery service, of course you can. And my theory is that it will fragment itself. It will compartmentalize itself. In other words, you'll be in Parkhurst, Parktown, North Craighall Park, and there'll be a service that says, okay, there's 56 restaurants in that area, and we are going to serve that particular area. It's not difficult to get a few kids on scooters and bikes to deliver food. If you want to, I don't think it's very profitable. I just think it's been overplayed enormously by Naspers Prosus. So. Yeah.
I think so. I know. When I drive, wherever I drive now, and I think not only in Johannesburg, but in any city now, you know, you nearly knock three people over, you know, because they're zooming in and out, and all of them are kind of almost self-employed, you know, picking up the cheapest bikes that they can. And I mean, it's a little bit of a dangerous area, but you're dead right. You know what I'm saying? That's what worries me about this. You know, I hope Tencent comes right. They're a very specific company, you know, in gaming and whatever they do. But when I look at these other businesses, it bothers me. You know, it bothers me that I don't know where this is going. Yes, they can have money and they can buy their shares back, but that's not long lasting. You know what I mean? That's not long. They've got to start making these other businesses profitable.
Yes, they have.
And they don't generate cash out of Tencent. You know, they generate it from the sale of Tencent, but not from Tencent itself.
So why is the market rallied? Is it because of the sale of the shares and the share buyback program? Is it as simple as that?
It could be. It could be.
Or
it
short
could
covering.
Be simply that. And short covering, maybe.
Okay. You know, it'd be very interesting to see what happens tomorrow.
You've got to look through, you know what I'm saying? You've got to look through those numbers yourself. You know, that's what I'm saying. Look through them and say, okay, where's this all leading? I know that there's short-term variations. The share's been at a huge discount to its underlying value.
Yeah.
And I'm thrilled because I've had Naspers in portfolios for a long time. And the fact that they're going up 15-20% just before the statements go out for the year, for the half year end, and I'll say thank goodness for that, you know. But when I look at it, you know, in more detail, I mean, Bob de Van Dijk has just paid himself 200 odd million rand. Is this deserving? I don't know. You know, for what?
You know, I don't want to say a word about that. No one's worth 200 million rand. I'm sorry. If a company's share price has fallen 30-40% or halved even, no one's worth that sort of money. I'm sorry, Bob. You're a nice chap, but
I agree with you.
I agree with you. You don't deserve it. You should give half of it away to charity or something.
If he was, if he had invented some kind of a cure, you know, for cancer, for every cancer where you took a pull and suddenly you bounced out of bed, I could understand. But for this, I don't know. And this is why I say that you get the Elizabeth Warrens of the world jumping up and down and getting so angry at the antics of call it Wall Street, meaning, you know, that's just a proxy for global markets. Yeah. Anyway, I've had my say. I just look at the numbers and say, nah, this is not great.
No, it's not good. But okay, that's the main story on the JSE today, apart from the reaction as well of the top 40 and the overall index, and also that follows on from this stunning rally that we spoke about at the beginning of the interview on Wall Street, which I believe is two things. The market is oversold, but also I do believe when I look at my commodity screen that the commodity cycle has its bubble has temporarily burst, and inflation next month or maybe the month after will come down, and that will buoy the markets. But we'll see if it continues on after that. David,
you've got to see that. You know, you've got to have something to base this on.
How's Eskom doing? I want to talk about South Africa because I've only got about 7 minutes
left.
No,
it's not good.
Eskom, have you got load shedding still? In other words, power cuts?
Well, twice. We woke up this morning to no electricity, which came on at exactly 7 o'clock this morning. So I get up at 5 for 2 hours that I was up. It wasn't. And then we had it again from 12 till about 2. I don't know whether it's coming on again tonight, but you can't live like that, Lindsay. You know, it's just disruptive. And so disruptive. And you know what the worst is? And people don't appreciate this. Every traffic light or robot goes out.
Yeah.
Now, you don't have any patrolmen. There are no cops around there to conduct traffic. So you can end up at a intersection where a busy, busy intersection, I'm talking busy, on a highway.
Like Sandton Drive with like William Nicol,
exactly,
for example.
Like that. Yeah. Exactly like that. Where you've got no robots. You've got no control or no cop. And you've got these trucks, you've got taxis, you've got the bikes, everybody vying and wanting to get through.
Oh, my gosh.
And because you have to stop, start, you know, let people through, it creates massive back, you know. But, the productivity means nothing in this country. But all I'm saying is there's no forward thinking. There's no, okay, at Sandton Drive and Nicol, let's put someone there. You know, let's put a cop there to control it. That one might have, I don't know, I'm not in that area, but I came across Grayston, I was on the M1 now going off at Grayston and Catherine. It was chaos. You know, just anyway. So that's what we're living in at the moment. I think people are getting really, really angry. You know, just angry at the lack of care and the lack of any form of service in these type of situations.
Well, what worries me, I mean, I'm looking from afar, but I spent 28 mostly happy years in South Africa, and the country's been good to me, and I enjoyed it, I embraced it, and it embraced me. I liked it. But when I saw that story about the 32 poor souls that lost their lives in a tavern over the weekend, the youngest person that died, David, was 13. Now, that to me is obviously a tragedy, but it's also it tells you that this is a lawless society. How can the owner of the tavern allow a 13-year-old in, probably sitting there drinking a Black Label or whatever? I don't know. I'm being a bit judgmental here. But how on earth are they allowed at 2 in the morning to be in a place like this? Why are they in a place like this? And I can tell you why. Because of economic degradation, because of the economy falling apart and the socioeconomic economy falling apart as well. It's Ramaphosa has lost control. I mean, on the one hand, you see these nice, shiny pictures of him on the telephone to Putin. On the other hand, his citizens are dying in a tavern.
I know. Well, he's going on to, I mean, now the G7 are meeting. Sooner they're going to invite him, I think, with Senegal. There are a couple of outsiders, India, I think, who will be invited as well, you know, into the discussions. And he comes across, you know, in a suit and tie, comes across as very erudite and well-spoken.
Which he is.
As though we're in control of things.
Mm.
Which he is.
But they're not. They're not in
control of the country.
No. They're not in control at all. No. They've lost control. It's becoming lawless again. Yeah. No electricity, young people dying in the middle of the night on a Sunday when they should be looking forward to going to school.
Be poisoned. What happened to... What in a tavern, were they drinking some kind of skokian or something, or smoking something or something?
It sounds like it was illegal alcohol or something which had that had been made in a still that wasn't very hygienic. But anyway, the point is they shouldn't have been there at 2 a.m. on a Sunday night. No. They should have been looking forward to going to school the next day, getting an education and trying to better themselves. But no, not at all. I think it's very sad, David.
Well, South Africa is a very, at the moment, we're a very sad country. And I think that, if you go through the Zonda report now, the final report, and document whatever it is, it's just astonishing that the present government can hold on to its, can hold on to its place. It's just, and no one cares. And that's the problem.
No.
I just urge you, I said to you, just read the two articles that appeared in The Economist now and think of yourself as someone who doesn't know this country. You know, are you going to come here? Are you going to invest here?
No.
It just identifies from the time, this Frieda dairy and what happened onwards. And how tainted, and they point fingers at Ramaphosa as well. And then we go on to the next story. All this money that vanished from his farm. I mean, it's just ludicrous.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that one. I don't follow it.
The markets are up, though.
The markets are up, which is great. But that's nothing to do with South Africa. That's to do with Tencent. It's not a South African good news story. It's a South African person who invested in Tencent good news story. And they pay, presumably they pay an enormous amount of taxes, which boost the fiscus and everything else. But otherwise, no, it's actually, I find it a little bit depressing. I would find it more depressing if I was living there, but on the other hand, I have a great affection for the country.
I think people are getting depressed,
Are they?
I think people
are you depressed?
I'm anxious. I'm anxious about the way that we live and the way out of it, because there doesn't seem to be any way out of where we are. And I'm much older than, I'm at an age where I don't have to think too hard about my future. In other words, building a living or building a family.
Yes.
But I think for young people, it's got to be disturbing.
Of course.
While you might have some rich people or the children of rich people who can send them to any other country, for the large and the vast majority, people are stuck here. And that's who we have to take care of. That's who we have to encourage and help.
My son is getting married in December, and his soon-to-be wife, his fiancée, is a teacher. He's got an online business, and he just phoned me up and said, "I want to move to Europe, and I want to start with the Netherlands because that seems to be the go-to place for young people leaving South Africa to go to Europe. The Netherlands, because it's organised. Afrikaans and Dutch, they're sort of interchangeable, I suppose. And he wants to do it. And he's been a real homeboy, David. He never wanted to go anywhere else. He loves South Africa, and he still does love South Africa, but he wants to move. And I've never had that before. He's 28 years old, and suddenly it's turned. And he's not a great follower of politics or socioeconomics, which again sort of made me think, goodness me, how many other people are doing this? Well, we know, but it makes me a bit sad. Okay, well, I've got to go, David, but thank you very much.
Pleasure.
I will speak to you
tomorrow,
next week.
Whenever.
Oh, yeah, tomorrow, of course, yeah. Okay. And Nick Kunze's back tomorrow, so we'll have a double-header Dream Team edition of the 5 o'clock shadow. That was that was Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities, and we'll be back with David and Nick tomorrow evening. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.